cancel culture.
CNN says it has cut ties with Kathy Griffin.
If you do anything wrong in your life, and I find out about it, I'm going to try to take everything away from you.
ABC canceled its top primetime series, Roseanne, because of a racist tweet.
There is this sense sometimes of the way of me making change is to be as judgmental as possible about other people.
Well, now the guy who posted the video online, Adam Smith, was fired by his employer.
Yeah, this is what publicly shaming is. It's basically taking someone's mistake, showing it publicly, and everybody piling on.
Cancel culture.
Cancel culture.
Cancel culture.
Welcome back to Canceled. My name is Rob Rosen. I'm the executive producer of Reasonable Doubt on Investigation Discovery and The Dead Files on the Travel Channel and Discovery Plus.
And I'm Desma Simon. I am the co-executive producer of Reasonable Doubt, a longtime television producer and a fan of telling rich and authentic stories.
Before we get to our guest this time, I do just kind of want to, I don't know, call this a public service, but I have been laid out for a couple weeks and I got it. I got the Rona. And on the one hand, I have to say I was lucky. I never had a difficulty breathing. There was never a time where I thought I was going to have to be rushed to the hospital. But considering that it was something that I recovered at from home, I do have to say it was a bitch. And I'm probably just 60% better now. But it was rough out there. And I'm just saying it because, you know, look, Desma and I have talked about stuff about lockdowns, and none of that has changed my opinion about that kind of like government mandated closures of small businesses. But just as a personal note to anybody who's listening, like, take it seriously. It sucks. And I was one of the lucky ones, but it really, really sucks. And it just knocks you on your ass.
You're a little shaky, but I appreciate that you mustered up the strength to take part in this interview. And I will say this, you know, for those who actually think that, you know, COVID is just some conspiracy theory and whatnot, when people get it, not only does it knock them on their ass, as Rob said, but it also affects the people around them. And, you know, with him being sick, it has affected me and it's affected people around him. So, yes, take it very seriously. And, you know, when someone is those around you, you know, not only protect yourself, but protect the people around you as well.
All right. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, I'm so excited for today's interview. This is the perfect thing to get out of the sick bed for. Desma has managed to track down the drummer for a band, System of a Down. His name is John Dilmayan. And oh my God, I have done many, many a workout to this band.
Fall into your hands, I commend my spirit. Fall into your hands, why have you forsaken me? In your eyes, forsaken me. In your thoughts, forsaken me. In your heart, forsaken me.
Yeah, Rob, I'm really excited about this interview. I'm a big fan of System of a Down. John is a man who is very, very vocal about his opinions. And the mob came after him, and they came after him pretty hard to a point where it hit a personal spot.
Yeah. So, by the way, if you wonder, what is it that the drummer for System of a Down could have possibly done to get himself in the crosshairs of the mob? He's an outspoken Trump supporter. So that's basically the extent of it. But we're going to dig deep. We're going to ask him a lot of questions. We're going to follow up. We're going to ask him if he regrets ever entering the fray to begin with, if he just wishes he had just kept his opinions to himself. So sit back, enjoy. It's a really good interview. System of a Down drummer, John Dilmayan. I got to tell you, John, I've done a lot when I've wanted like a super aggressive workout. I've done a lot of sweating to System of a Down. That is
why you tell me that. Yeah, I don't know how you do it because the time signatures are all over the place. So like, when I work out, I actually listen to talk radio when I work out.
Really?
Yeah, I'm weird. Because if I have music on, my the way my mind works is I automatically go into a tempo, right? So if I'm listening to it and I'm pushing weight, it has to be to the beat.
That's the music. That's the difference between a musician and a non-musician, right? So I'm usually dealing with words for a living. So for me, I don't want to listen to talk radio when I'm working out. I just want to like get lost in the music. But like,
that makes sense. I think most people are like that. It's just it's my particular way of looking at music and kind of dissecting it. And I break it down when I listen to it a lot. I also can't help but like think of what I would have done differently. And
Lost in the Hollywood song, right? So for anybody who's worked in Hollywood, if you're ever really feeling mad about the business, that is your go-to song there.
You should have never gone to Hollywood. They take you and make you. They look at you with disgusting ways. You should have never trusted Hollywood.
It's a tough business. Tough business, Hollywood.
It's brutal. It's a brutal business, man. And the thing really is that people still come here year after year, you know, by the, selling everything and say, I'm going to make it. And the business changes at a dime. And it's brutal. It's cutthroat. And people just, but it's that love of fame.
Well, somebody's got to make it. You know, somebody has to make it. I think that's true for everybody that's an artist or everybody that is an entrepreneur. You know, if you put in the work, you may fail. You know, that's always going to be a possibility. But at the very least, you can move on with your life knowing that you've done everything you could in the process of success, right? Like you put in all your effort. Sometimes you have to work without a net to really succeed in life, you know. And even if you don't achieve the success that you were striving towards, you might achieve a different kind of success. And at the very least, you will have that pride knowing that you put in the effort to try to make it in whatever endeavor that you're trying to make it in.
I see, right. John, you're talking individual responsibility. This is the kind of stuff that's getting you in trouble.
I'm in a lot of trouble right now.
Just to back up a little bit, how did you start playing drums?
My dad plays saxophone. And he was a jazz musician, big fan of jazz. And he actually started on the drums in Lebanon, playing for like funeral marches and stuff like that. You know, you play like a bass drum or a snare or something like that for funeral marches. They used to have that back in the day. And, he had music in him. And I had music in me when I was born. I would mimic drummers from the age of like 2 years old. My dad would play with various Armenian artists in Lebanon and some Arabic artists as well. But of course his first love was always jazz. So he'd always try to play jazz whenever possible. And, you know, he's my inspiration and where my talent comes from. He's the wellspring of my talent. And very early on, everybody knew I wanted to play drums because I was just always hitting something and mimicking the drummer. And when sometimes my dad would play live and I would go to the front of the stage on stage and pretend I was playing drums. And finally, after begging them for a drum set for, you know, 10 years or so, at 15, they got me a drum set. And from there, I spent, you know, 4 to 6 hours a day playing drums, learning drums, trying to develop technique, trying to figure out what people were doing on albums. So kind of the way I learned how to play is I would just put albums on my dad's collection, my friend's albums, whatever I can get my hands on. I would just play along to it. And then sometimes I would just turn on the radio and play along to whatever was on the radio. And all this helped me develop the timing that I have. And also because I was playing so many different kinds of music, it was instrumental in my abilities with system, which is really an amalgam of many different styles of music. So it all kind of worked out in the right way.
So when you end up joining System, pretty quickly you guys start to blow up. Right. I mean, it's just, you're just a couple years later, you win a Grammy, you're going on major tours, you got some huge hits. What did that feel like? What's that first blush with fame when you're part of a rock band feel like? Are you guys just like intoxicated with it?
System was already selling out venues when I joined. So, you know, we're playing Roxy, Whiskey, Viper Room, those types of places. I'd never done that before. You know, usually the audience comprised of friends and family from my shows and other bands. We just didn't, we never had the songs, you know? And so right away, it was different with System. There's a different energy. But it was always a gradual build. You know, even when we got signed, I think we sold, it was like 1,500 records or so the first week. It could have been 3,000, I'm not sure. But I couldn't imagine that that many people wanted to buy our music, you know? And I was like, well, like, they can't be right because I don't know 1,500 people. Like, who bought these records? And then we ended up at around 100,000 records after about 6 months. And we were all just looking at each other like, man, we sold 100,000 records. It's pretty impressive, you know? For a band that nobody thought should even get signed, right? Like, a lot of people were like, this music has no place. You know, K-Rock, Kevin Weatherly at K-Rock told my manager that I love System, but System will never be played on K-Rock.
Yeah. You know? Really?
Yeah, because that's, he goes, there's no, it's too loud.
Insane.
Yeah, and then like 2 years later, we were the number one band played not only on K-Rock, but pretty much across the United States. I mean, we were getting as many spins on MTV as Britney Spears, you know? So I think the maximum was like 45. We were getting 45 for Toxicity by the time Toxicity came out, and so was Britney Spears. So, you know, we did achieve the pinnacle when it concerns, you know, pop music, really. It became pop music. So, yeah, we started touring, and then they released a year into the – we didn't release a single for a year. We released Sugar. And then that blew up, and that took us from 100,000 records to 500,000 records. We were on the road somewhere. We got a call from our manager, and he said, congratulations, you've sold 500,000 records. And I was like, every time we'd hit any kind of benchmark or achievement, it was more unbelievable than last, you know? We just never took it for granted, you know. It was always appreciated, and we were just always more shocked than anything else. Plus, you're kind of in that limbo of being on tour where every day is the same for you and the rest of the world's still moving.
Right.
So we didn't even realize what was happening. And then we get back to L.A., and it was like people looked at you differently, you know. Some people treated you differently. It wasn't always a positive, but it was a little bit of a shock because – we just felt like we were the same guys.
Your album, Toxicity, is one of my favorite albums. I still listen to it to this day, and it's got me through a lot of CrossFit workouts, so thank you for that masterpiece.
That's I greatly appreciate it. I don't know how anybody gets through CrossFit. That is hard stuff. Hard stuff to get through. More power to you.
Yeah. Well, System of a Down album, Toxicity, it'll definitely do it. So,
well, I appreciate it. It's a very thrashy album, so it's good for working out, I guess.
That's gotta be hard when you're on tour every day and you got to bring it that hard. Like, were there just some days where you're like, oh, we just can't. Like, I mean,
there really are. You know, like I gotta tell you, it is so boring on tour. You know, like. How many times can you go see the same monuments? You know, at the end of the day, you're seeing buildings. You go to all the museums. When we were early on, we were so broke, we couldn't go anywhere, you know? And, I mean, it was fun with the ladies and stuff. You know, that was always a good time meeting people and, being in different cities and, you know, I'm very much in love with women. I have a wife now, so it's a different world. But I loved meeting women and meeting new people in general. And I developed very strong relationships with a lot of people over the years, friendships that still remain, even though maybe the affair is over, you know, but you develop relationships with people. My wife is not too happy about that, so a lot of that had to go away. But those were a lot of positive experiences, you know. But other than that, it is so boring on tour, and you're looking for something to do. So that when you finally get that hour or half hour or 2 hours to play, that's your reward. So you look forward to that. It's never like, oh, shit, I got to go up and play. What are you doing that's better than that? No matter what you're doing, you'd rather be doing that.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because most people would think that this going on tours like the ultimate playground, and you're out and you're doing all these things. And so appreciate you putting that perspective for us. But, you know, besides you being this amazing drummer, and I got to say, you do have a very distinctive sound. You know, like your talent is, you when you hear you play drums, like you know it's you. You also have other interests, which is comic books.
Mm-hmm.
Which, so tell us about that. How did you even get involved in comic books?
Well, I'm into a lot of nerd stuff. You know, I'm a nerd. You know, I like art. I love comic books. Loved them since I was 12 years old and was introduced to them by a friend. And just developed a love for the characters. Primarily, I think the reason a lot of people associate with superheroes is because they feel powerless in their lives to affect the change that they want to affect. You know, and here are these superheroes, and most of them do it just purely because they want to serve their fellow man. You know, they're not doing it for financial reasons. It's usually altruistic in nature. And I think people relate to that because that's what they want to be. And that's something, that's an ideal that they want to embody in a lot of ways. And I think I'm one of those people. I see injustice in the world, and I see, you know, awful things being done in the name of nationality or whatever God believe in, and it's disgusting to me, and I want to do something about it, but I feel powerless to do something about it. And also because of the artistic nature of my mind. I always enjoyed short stories. I used to write short stories when I was a kid. So, you know, comics are good because it's 22 pages, a lot of drawing, and it's kind of a short story every month. You know, so, and who doesn't like Spider-Man and Batman and Superman and X-Men, and I can go on and on. Fantastic Four is probably my favorite. But it was easy for me to get into that and also enjoyed playing Dungeons & Dragons. I mean, it's everything that now people are like, oh, that's kind of cool. I was into it when it wasn't cool and when you were looked at kind of like a dweeb for doing it. Mm. Yeah.
So totally. I guess this is what brings us to cancel culture. So,
that's a good segue.
Yes. So you are a, and you stop me if I get any of this wrong, but you are a conservative. You're the one member of your band, right, who's sort of an outspoken Trump supporter, conservative.
Uh-huh.
Tell me, and I'm going to make this a two-parted question. How has that affected relationships within the band? Has that become something that's a little bit of a source of tension? And how has it affected the relationship with the fans?
It's affected the band not at all. First of all, there's a lot of different ideologies taking place in my band. You know, obviously my singer is, you can consider him far left. At least from, if you read all his viewpoints, you know, and all his posts, you would think he was far left. And also a lot of his lyrical content is far left in nature. But he's really not far left. And then you have two guys in the band that don't really talk about politics. Of course, they have their own views, and I'm not here to talk about their views. That's their business. And then you have me. Most of our career, I've kept my mouth shut because I had no... You know, there was no social media for a lot of it. And because it really wasn't important for me to talk about politics in general. You know, I had some viewpoints. Of course, I talked in great detail about the Armenian Genocide throughout my career. But I don't know. I think as you get older, you're more aware of politics. And when you're younger, you're so focused on trying to achieve whatever goals you have. It's just not as important. At least that's the way it was for me. I feel like today, primarily because of social media, young people are much more involved in the political venue than they had been in previous generations. Now, there's some positive about that and there's some negative about that. The positive is that you want everybody to be engaged. You want everybody to be thinking, and you want everybody to be a part of the process, especially when the rules that these people create are, you know, govern all of us, right? And irrespective of our age. The negative of that is young people tend to be, how can I say it? A little naive in their politics. They tend to believe something, you know, idealistic in nature, right? Like, we want everybody to be equal in all ways, right? But the reality is there is no such thing as equality in nature. There's equality in that everything is equally different, right?
So John, I'm sorry, I will get to that, but I guess let me just get you to the part B of the question, though, which is, do you feel that it created some tension amongst fans of the band, right? Because Everything's so polarized now. Are there fans out there who are like, what's wrong with this guy?
I would say there's a lot of fans out there that say, what's wrong with this guy? And a lot of fans that just don't understand where I'm coming from. And part of it is because I did put up some posts that were pretty sensationalistic in nature. You know? Is that a word? Sensationalistic? Sensationalist. Sensationalistic. Whatever.
I think that's a word. What did you post? Can you say, or did you
agree? I mean, I don't remember. It was meant more in jest, but it was taken very seriously. And then I was like, wow, you know, people really have no sense of humor right now. And yeah, it has affected quite a bit of our fan base because Serge wrote the lyrics in System of a Down, and a lot of them are left-leaning. So people automatically assumed that that was the only mindset in the band. And I think that's a fair assumption to make. So because of that, I got a lot of negative feedback. A lot of, I won't say a lot. Some people were like, we got to get rid of John, get John out of the band, which is, it's impossible to get me out of my band. I own 25% of the band. The band has no intention of getting rid of me or any other member in the band. It's just not the way we operate. And believe it or not, Serge is my brother-in-law. So we have a lot of debates, but they're always done respectfully. And although some stuff got a little out of hand online between us, once we got together, it was very easy to figure out that we were pretty much both in the same center point, right? It's just that I was a little bit more on one side and he was a little bit more on the other. And we had agreed to disagree a lot. That's the way it's supposed to be. You're supposed to be able to have discussions with people and have opposing viewpoints, gain perspective, understand each other, and then move forward. And then when new information comes in, you change your ideas. You can't stick to one ideology your whole life, whichever side you're on.
I don't think that's anything that anyone would dispute. You know, I think that's a fair assessment. Everyone wants that.
You would think so. And also, one thing that I think is very important, and I posted about this a couple of days ago and got a lot of flack for it, of course. I get a lot of flack for anything I post. But I said that, you know, I wanted to...
Twitter hasn't suspended you yet? I'm waiting.
I don't subscribe to Twitter. I haven't been on Twitter. I only like Instagram. That's the only one. So I posted something that basically said, I will support, you know, the Biden presidency. And I will do everything I can to make it a success, which is, I believe that's what every American's responsibility is, irrespective of what side of the fence you're on, is that when somebody gets elected, you do everything you can in your power to help them, you know, better the country.
You got shit mm-hmm. for that?
Yeah.
I get shit for everything because it's just the world we live in. You know, if I say something, if one word is off, it offends the people are so easily offended today and have such thin skin that anything you say can be looked at in any way they want. There is no like, oh, I think I get what he's saying. Maybe I misunderstood or maybe I didn't, but I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. That benefit of the doubt is gone.
Of course.
And people are hypersensitive, and it's to the detriment of all of us, really. This hypersensitivity is not good for anybody. And it has led to this culture of canceling people because they don't agree with you.
Let me ask you this, John, because you are considered a public figure.
Yes.
Do you think people just follow you on Instagram, just waiting to see what you're going to post next to give you shit about? I mean, do you think there's just trolls that are just out in the wings, just waiting for your next move? Or do you think this is just some, or do you think this is just behavior that people just do, you know, to anyone?
It could be. There are also people that troll opposing viewpoints on both sides, by the way. This doesn't just happen from liberals, it happens from conservatives as well. And these are really people that are devoid of purpose in life, that spend all day doing this. But I think generally speaking, the people that follow me are fans. You know, they're fans of system first, and then they're fans of me second. And, you know, they might end up being real big fans of my comic book that I wrote that came out today. And
congratulations on that.
And there may be a point in 5 years where more people know me for that than they do for system. That sometimes happens, you know, or maybe not. Who knows? I didn't put it out there for that. I put it out there because I really believe the story is good. And my artists are just fantastic, you know. And I love comics. So I wanted to be a writer, you know. I can't draw for shit. So writing was my only option. But yeah, you got to take it with a grain of salt.
Now, John, didn't some people come after you at the comic book store, like writing Yelp reviews, this guy's a fascist? Like, tell us a little bit about that.
Again, you can't take them too seriously, because if you take them seriously, you give them power. But yeah, they wrote some Yelp reviews, but as soon as they did, all that did was galvanize the fans of the comic book store, who a lot of them don't know anything about my politics, don't even know I'm in a band. And they went up and wrote basically positive reviews in rebuttal, you know. And anybody that comes into my store, that's a place for everybody. You know, there's no ideology that permeates a comic book store. You have people of all kinds of ethnicities, sexual orientations, religious backgrounds, height, weight, skin color, you know, they're all coming in there and being nerds. And we're all nerds together. Just like when I watch an audience of fans, it doesn't make a difference if they're black, white, Asian, Latino, woman, man, whatever. It makes no difference. They're all singing the songs together, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's so ridiculous to attack someone's business. By the way, I've got 20 employees. If my business goes away, those 20 employees lose a job.
Oh, the mob doesn't care. We've done this show long enough to know they don't care.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is there's no thought, right?
Of course.
It's an impossibility that all 20 of my employees share my beliefs in politics. It's impossible.
But John, I think you're operating under a rational mode of thought here. And I think that one of the things you have to understand about the mob is, at least as far as politics goes, is the mob convinced itself that Donald Trump is a enemy of the people, is a Nazi, is a racist, and any support for him whatsoever, or anyone who supports him, needs to be destroyed. And so they feel perfectly justified in their own minds in purging. And you see that in many different ways going on right now. There's this sort of purge out there, whether it's on social media.
I've been a victim of it. I assure you, there's, you know, I was, let's just say that Essentia could easily be made into a TV show or a movie. And I had an agency working on that with me, and that agency had to take a step back.
Mm-hmm.
So I've already been a victim of this, and it's no different and no better than what happened in the 50s with McCarthyism. I don't believe in communism. I don't believe in socialism. I believe in social programs, you know, but I also wouldn't condemn somebody. I wouldn't put somebody in jail for their beliefs. You could be wrong and still teach something to somebody, right? Like, the communist ideal doesn't work. It's been proven more times than I care to count that it cannot work. but you can still learn something from it. You know, there are positives, and we can take those positives and incorporate it into our capitalist system here, you know, so that we can benefit everybody. But I think that the pendulum will swing hard the other way too. You know, it's not going to be like this forever. Cooler heads will prevail, but you have to understand the way people are treated today isn't going to be forgotten, right? Like, all these people on social media, that's forever. And the mindset could get more conservative, and then people could be looking at your social media 15 years from now when you're applying for a job somewhere and cancel you back. It could happen. So you got to be careful. You know, you got to be careful what you wish for. Now, the agency I'm working with, they're really good people. And they have a big company to think about. And I probably shouldn't be talking about this, but I always do this to myself. At the end of the day, we may end up working together. And if we don't, we don't. But I understand where they're coming from. They have to protect their interests, right? But this is the problem, right? You got Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, every mainstream news organization, all thinking and working in one direction. That's very bad. Corporations should not be dictating ideology. That's not what they're for. But they're probably a little too powerful at this point. You know, you can't even get a web server. Look what they did to look what they did to Parler. I got on Parler. There's no network. They don't have a network because they have a different ideology. They got rid of them. Well, to me, that's fascist. I mean, isn't that the definition of fascism? You know, to eradicate any thought outside of your own. So it's like, and these young people that, you know, they're going through this indoctrination, you know, and they don't even know history. You know, like history is being eradicated. Like,
you know, John, I'm curious for you because, I mean, people definitely disagree with your political views. But one of the things you've actually been called out on social media is actually being a racist. And, you know, all throughout this conversation, you've been pretty open to the idea that, look, you know, people have their opinion, but I'm still going to express mine. I mean, what is your answer to that? I mean, because it's my understanding you have some pretty strong views about Black Lives Matter. Yes. So when someone says that, you know, you're a racist, explain to me, you know, one, what your viewpoint is on Black Lives Matter, and two, you know, how do you answer being called a racist?
Well, I ignore anybody that calls me a racist, which is what I should do. There should be no apology. There should be no trying to prove anything to them. You prove I'm a racist. I don't have to prove anything to you. You get what I'm saying? That's my philosophy on that. As far as Black Lives Matter is concerned, I don't like the Black Lives Matter organization. Many of their founders are flat-out communists. And I don't think the Black Lives Matter movement or organization, not the movement, because I think a lot of people think differently than what the actual movement is about. I don't think they give two shits about Black Lives. I think they're a democratic fundraising tool. I think they have a communist agenda. And if they really cared about Black lives, they would care about the Black-on-Black violence in our inner cities. And I understand, you know, no person should be killed by police officers unless there's reasonable threat to either the police officer or someone else's life. You have to handle that stuff in courts. That's why we have courts. So I am 100% a supporter of keeping our police in check and also making sure that they are protecting the citizens that they have sworn to protect and they are following due process of law. No matter what your crime, you have to go through the process. Otherwise, the system doesn't work. So I'm all for that. But I am not for an organization that does almost nothing to help Black people in the inner cities, and especially people that are victims of Black and on Black violence. They never talk about it. They never do anything about it. And, you know, you have a lot of support that went to the Black Lives Matter movement. And then I saw a list of where the money went, like the contributions, and it all went to Democrat election campaigns. Is it a Democrat organization, or is it a movement to end racism or bring a better life to Black people in inner cities or Black people in general? Or is it? It should really be, because when you initially think about it, it almost should have been called Black Lives Matter 2, right? Because if you're saying, yeah, 2, because if you're saying that we're rallying against the fact that Black lives don't matter to people, right? If that's what you're saying, then you have to include every human being into that. But you also have to point out that maybe Black lives don't matter as much to you as they should, right? So that's something that you can get behind a little bit more. But to say Black lives matter, that's like segregation to me. You know, you're segregating Black people instead of saying we're all in this together. You're saying, no, Black people are here and you're a racist. That's going to turn off a lot of people.
So here's the thing, and this is, I think, a big reason that we do the show. Now, some people have been listening to you, and they're going to be like, oh, you know, why did these guys give this guy a platform? Some of people are going to be in agreement with you. I think what we've lost so much is the ability to have a discussion that it's healthy. So this is your viewpoint, and then there's the Marxist viewpoint, and then there's, you know, there are a million different viewpoints. And I think in a healthy society, they're all allowed to speak. They're all put into a pot, mixed together. And somehow, some sort of truth or wisdom emerges from it. That's kind of always been the way we've done it in a free society. Mm-hmm. But we're now at a point, and I've just thought about this a lot in the past year. If you question some of the wisdom of lockdowns, if you want
anything,
right? But I mean, there are just certain taboo topics now that are you're not allowed to discuss, or you risk cancellation. How do you think that we've gotten to the point where, when in the past, within reason, almost every opposing, provocative viewpoint was welcome? It was interesting. People talked about it. People booked people on as guests. And now, if you're not falling in line, the guillotine comes out. How did we get here?
I don't know. It's very dangerous. Because like I said, the pendulum always swings harder the other way. You know, and, you know, I'm a type of person that really can't win. And the reason I can't win is when the country's leaning more left, like it is right now, I can't win, right? Because I'm giving more conservative viewpoints. And then if a really conservative regime comes in and they enact policies that I don't like, I'm also a loser there. Because then I'm going to be like, well, wait a minute. That's not sensible. You're going too far to the right. You need to come and have some of these democratic ideas, you know? So really, I should just keep my mouth shut and never say anything. Because I'm going to offend one side or the other at all times, because truly I'm a centrist.
All right. So do you wish, now looking back, do you wish you just never got mixed into the fray at all?
No. And the reason why is because I've gotten messages from a lot of people that said they were contemplating suicide because they felt alone in the world. But because I was vocal and I had the, what do you call it, stupidity or bravery to voice my opinions, whether people agreed with them or not, that they felt like they weren't alone anymore. And that helped them. So I may never get my comic book made into a TV show or a movie. I may have millions of fans disown me, but those people are alive. You know, so you just have to make personal choices in life, and you know, you have to decide whether it's more important for you to have more money and things, or if it's important for you to live by a certain code, you know. And at the end of the day, I like to think that I'm a good person and that I would help anybody equally. And that's the truth. And if you look at the history of my life, that's exactly what I've done.
There's a lot of people who may be listening that will listen to this. And
I hope they do.
For sure. They'll be listening. Trust me. But there's going to be a lot of people who listen to what you're saying, and they're just, it's the thought's going to cross their mind. Like, damn, I wish I can be as vocal as him, because it takes a lot of bravery to be vocal. It takes a lot of bravery to put yourself out there. Like, I mean, you're really going against the grain here. I mean, if you are the complete opposite of everything that people are trying to push, any belief, any idea that you're trying to push it, you will go the complete opposite of direction and you go hard with it. What is it that you can share that helps you be able to do this? You know, why are you so vocal? Why are you so bold? And adhere to your opinions and just basically kind of have, you know, I don't give a fuck attitude, you know, about it. Like, this is my opinion.
It's not that I don't give a fuck. And let me clarify something. If the Antifa movement and the Black Lives Matter movement were nonviolent and they weren't setting up autonomous zones and all that stuff, not only would they have my support, they would have my absolute financial support, blessing. You know, I think that there are positives in those movements that you can support, right? My issue with them, just like my issue with what happened in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks back, is that if you're gonna resort to violence, people are going to get killed, you're going to hurt or maim cops, and you're going to destroy small businesses. How can I support you? You know, I will fight to the death for a communist right to say what they want to say here in the United States. And I couldn't be more opposed to the ideology. But I would say this, anybody that is thinking about being vocal, be weary. We are in a society that is hypersensitive right now, and cancel culture is a real thing. And it can really hurt you. You know, part of the reason why I have been vocal about it, we've already discussed, you know, is because somebody has to be, you know, and the first person through the gates is always going to take the most hits, you know. But there are other people, other outspoken people as well. Elon Musk is very outspoken. Mm-hmm. You know, he's much smarter than I am, so he says it more eloquently, but he says a lot of the same things. And, you know, that guy's going to be a trillionaire. So
by Friday, the way that stock is moving.
Well, I keep buying it one share at a time, because that's all I can afford right now. Save up, I buy a share here and there. But, you know, for anybody out there, you got to make your personal decisions. Do it in an intelligent manner. Do it from a point of love and understanding and compassion, and the chips are going to fall where they may. So you are taking a risk. You guys are taking a risk doing this podcast, you know, so.
You're not the first person who've told us that.
No, definitely not.
So.
You have to have, to get to the middle, you have to have opposing viewpoints. You know, I hope, this is my absolute dream for the Republicans in the Senate and Congress right now, is that they do everything they can to help this president do whatever they can that's best for the country, work with the opposition, set the precedent, And then when you take power, eventually it always shifts. Ask them to do the same. And I hope that we can elect people that are sensible and fair-minded, that actually care about this country, not just about getting in the way of the last guy. And I will tell you, you will probably never get somebody elected like Trump again. Now, a lot of people are going to be jumping up and down for joy. And I'll tell you where there's a danger, is that here was a guy who's a billionaire. However he got his money, what is irrelevant. He was a billionaire. He didn't have to go into the presidency. He didn't have to go into the public eye the way he did. He was already very popular. You will never again see someone go into political office on that level that is not a career politician. And that is probably the worst thing for America. Because at the end of the day, these career politicians that spend their lives talking a certain way, acting a certain way, you don't know what they're thinking inside. You don't know how they feel inside. They'll never tell you. Biden's probably going to go in and do nothing, to be honest with you. A couple of policies here and there, it'll shift an inch this way, but that's it. All the stuff he's talking about, I don't think any of it's going to happen. He's not going to, I hope it doesn't happen, because our free speech is already being infringed on.
Well, you know what they say about free speech, and I think that's, this is the most chilling part of it. You know, when people lose their right to free speech is when they start picking up arms. And I think in a society like ours, you want the free speech. I am a free speech absolutist. You want everyone within reason to be able to have their say. And then people decide. And when you try to silence people, you're going to pay the price.
You know what? You got to go all the way with it. You have to understand that to have real free speech, you have to let anyone have a say. Anyone. Mm-hmm. People that like I said, you would spend your entire life opposing them. You have to fight for them to have free speech. Otherwise, you don't believe in it. If you don't believe in it, you shouldn't say it. You should just say, look, I don't agree with anything you have to say, and I also don't think you have a right to say it. That's the truth, right? That's what they should say, if that's what they believe. But if you don't believe it, where are all the liberals? I mentioned this to a few, I'm not going to say who, the other day. I said, where are you? Why aren't you on your platforms saying, I don't agree with the censoring and the destruction of your freedom of expression and free speech in this country? I don't agree with it. And I'm a hardcore liberal. Where are they? They're silent. You know? Yeah.
And that's Glenn Greenwald spoke out, but that was about the only one I saw.
That was about it. Yeah. Few
and far between. Let's just say it's few and far between. A lot of silence right now. And I will tell you that if the role was reversed, I would be very outspoken about it. That's why I'm stupid. I cannot win. No matter right. what happens, somebody's going to hate me, you know?
Right.
Well, by the way, I felt a little bit about the way you did in the run-up to the Iraq war. You know, and again, my personal opinions don't matter, but I happen to have been against that war. And in the run-up to it, I was concerned about how chilling I felt the environment was for people who wanted to speak out against the war. You know, the drum beats were on, and it was post 9/11, and any opposition to it suddenly made you unpatriotic, sympathetic towards Islamic fascism, and it was very repressive. And I felt that we never had the debate we should have had.
No,
and I think that the same kind of dynamic is playing out now, but it's with just a different side on top. It's not right either way.
No, exactly. It's not right either way. And one thing that I really admired about Donald Trump is he got us out of a lot of unnecessary conflicts internationally. You know, and being an Armenian right now with what's going on in Armenia, trust me, I want somebody to intervene. I want some ass-kicking happening to the enemies of Armenia. But at the end of the day, that's not really the United States' responsibility. You know? I think there's going to be a major world war coming soon, personally. And I think it's going to be religious-based. And I think a lot of people are going to die. I'm deathly afraid of this happening. We have to be very careful with how we go forward the next 20 or 30 years, because we think that we live in a stable society, but it doesn't take much to destabilize it. And if you look at the past year, he was pretty close to destabilizing.
Oh, of course. I mean, there was a lot of things that happened. And I mean, even up to this point, you know, just last week, there are still events happening. So that brings me back. What was that, John?
I said, hopefully it's over.
You know? Hopefully.
Hopefully. Peaceful protest. Do it all. Do it as much as you want. Peacefully.
Peacefully.
You know, peacefully.
So that brings me back to cancel culture. You know, you've been on the receiving end of it. How do we fix this? How do we get past the online mob, the shaming, the bullying, the silencing?
Well, I actually don't think the way you fix it is to go make your own platforms. That just separates you more. You know, we may have to just grit our teeth and bear this burden for a little while and let cooler heads prevail later. You know, like you can't hit a bee's nest with a stick and then expect everything to be normalized 5 seconds later. The bees are going to be running around, you know, looking for danger. But I think that I'm hoping that things will stabilize, calm down, you know, mission accomplished. You will never have another person like Donald Trump run for office again. You know, you got it. You want career politicians going forward? The powers that be prefer that because they know that they own them. You know, they pay them off real early with and you know, paying for their campaigns and all that. And they own them all the way through. You got your wish. You got it back. Now let's bring it back down. You know, stop antagonizing people and feeding them disinformation and getting these people hyped up. At the end of the day, they're all good people, most of them, you know? But like, if I tell you that that person is doing you harm long enough, you're going to believe it. And I give you like pictures and information and it's all kind of like bullshit, right? But it makes it look like it. You're going to tend to believe it after a while. So I'm hoping that that starts to subside because otherwise we're in for a much bigger deal, you know, and this is a great country, but there's been great societies and countries before and they've fallen. So nobody is going to come in from the outside and destroy this country. It can only be done from the inside.
We're doing a pretty good job of it. So last question, is there going to be a new System of a Down album? What's going on?
I was barely able to get two songs out of the guys. So that was a rough go. So I don't think so. I don't see it happening, but it's got nothing to do with politics. It's just stupidity.
So maybe one day, but you're saying over this, the last 9 months of lockdown, you guys got two songs, maybe an EP.
Only got the two songs because of the conflict in Armenia. Otherwise those two songs wouldn't happen.
And hopefully going to get back to some sort, some form of real life. And I don't know, maybe in the fall we can rock out to a System of a Down concert.
I hope we get a lot to play again. We were supposed to play a year ago, but I think we're looking at October now. This is what okay. We're here in LA.
All right. Desmo will come and rock out with you guys.
Thank you guys. I appreciate you doing this. You know, it was a really nice conversation.
All right, John. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
Good talking to you.
Enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right,
bye-bye. All right. So that was our interview with John Dolmayan. I got to say, Rob, you know, his viewpoints are a little different than mine. Mm-hmm. But I got to say, I do appreciate him owning his opinion. And and at the end of the day, that's what it is. It's just an opinion. But he owns it. And the way he presents his opinion, you know, if you're a little bit open-minded, you can probably see a little bit where he's coming from if you're open-minded.
Yeah. And I mean, look, we've said it again and again. Whatever your point of view is, this whole, you know, and a lot of it was done by Trump himself. I understand that because I can already hear the arguments people are making. But when we've crossed the line and said that a president who got the support of 40-45% of the country is so toxic, is so dangerous, is so bad that anyone who expresses any kind of support for that person needs to be purged themselves. We're never going to heal. We're never going to heal. This is not David Duke with 0.5% somewhere. This isn't, you know, an opinion that is so unbelievably extreme. What he's expressing is an opinion that many people share. And you know what? If you don't agree with them, then just don't agree with them. But does it really mean you can't enjoy their music anymore, the band's music? Or if you were in Las Vegas and you wanted to pick up a comic book, you couldn't go to a store? Like, have we really gotten to the point where, like, we only do business, we only talk to people who think exactly the way we do? So stale. Like, I just think life needs to be richer and more dynamic and more diverse, and we should challenge ourselves to just talk to all sorts of different people who have all sorts of life experiences.
Here's the thing. I mean, the guy, you know, John has his point of view and it's his opinion, and we can agree or disagree. Doesn't matter, right? But at the end of the day, that is not a representation of his comic book store. Just not. And I think that's where we go wrong as individuals is, you know, the mob just decides that, you know what? I don't agree with his political views. So, you know what? His employees and his company is all under fire just because it's tied to him. And, you know, you mentioned the word stale. If everything was exactly the same and everyone thought exactly the same and walked and talked and preached exactly the same, life would be so boring, so boring. But at least I will say this about John. At least he adds a little flavor to the conversation. You know, he brings a flair that a lot of people don't have. He's a little bit, he's thought provoking. He makes you sit and kind of make you sit and wonder just a little bit. So that I can appreciate because I, as an individual, I like diversity. I like having conversations. I like meeting someone who's the complete opposite of me. I mean, again, I can't say this enough, is that I don't agree with him politically. However, I love his band and I love the music that they put out. If I, you know, put that aside and only focus on his political views, well, then you know what? I'm robbing myself out of a really great musical experience. And sure. Who's losing out? Just me.
And,
not him.
And, you know, and there's also got to be an understanding, right? A guy like John is not even born in America. Right, he was born in Lebanon. He was born in a war-torn country. His family's Armenian. We didn't even really get into all of that, but I mean, he's got a lot of life experiences which might color and shape his points of view in ways that someone who was born in America would have a different perspective on, and that's fine, right? That's the richness of the ideas. That's, you know, if there's one thing that we keep harping on week after week after week, it's that different points of view, hearing something you disagree with, is not a physical assault on you. In fact, it's a good thing. It makes you think, it makes you grow. You could reject the idea 100%, but it didn't kill you to hear it. And that's what discussions and healthy societies are all about. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week. My name is Rob Rosen. I'm the executive producer of a TV show called Reasonable Doubt on Investigation Discovery and The Dead Files on the Travel Channel and Discovery Plus.
And I'm Desma Simon. I am the co-executive producer of Reasonable Doubt, a longtime television producer and a big fan of telling rich and authentic stories and exploring content with a purpose.
All right, everybody. Please be safe. Be careful out there. And remember, whatever you put on social media, that's part of your permanent record. So think before you post.
You should have never trusted Hollywood.